Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever and whenever you happen to be listening to us in this great wide world brought together by the internet. We are the last three guys to do a podcast for another live session on Facebook Live and a rebroadcast on SoundCloud and the radio.com apps. I'm John Morgo. We are on Zoom today, again, trying this out. It worked last time. It's going to work again today. I've got Daniel Bolt and Leon Brown with us as you can see on our Zoom feed. And again, if you want to join us on Zoom, DM me. I will be more than happy to give you the meeting ID and the invitation so you can get on with us and talk about everything that's been going on. Todd Corder is on with us right now. He is in the bottom right-hand corner of the screen if you're watching on Zoom. And Todd is the Atlanta Prime, was it Atlanta Prime Tonight Sports? Atlanta Prime Sports? He was.
Oh, yes, ATL Prime Sports. Do play-by-play college football on the SIAC Conference.
He was kind enough to have me on a few weeks ago, so we figured we would return the favor and have him on for us for another one of these sessions. Again, I am in Henderson, Nevada at my parents' house. I'll be headed back to Atlanta tomorrow. Daniel and Leon, they are in Atlanta. They stayed out of it. But, again, a lot of stuff to talk about. But first, I mean, I guess it's kind of the thing we have to discuss here, guys, in terms of what we saw the riot Friday night down at CNN Center. Lots of looting, some injuries. Thankfully, nobody lost their lives. But this has certainly been a really strange time in this country. We want sports to come back, and they're making some very hesitant moves, but it just seems like every time we try, we're just getting engulfed in these other issues, which basically threatens to drown us out and basically divide this country right down the middle in a manner that it may never, ever recover from. And again, I wasn't down here. I wasn't down in Atlanta, and I don't think either you guys were in there, but Leon, Daniel, what is the story going on in Atlanta right now?
Dan, you want to go first?
No, you got it. Go ahead.
Well, I was near downtown on Friday night. I got off work about 10 o'clock, and I was walking through Midtown, which is like maybe three quarters of a mile from where the action was. But it seems that you know, I don't know if this is unfortunate or I don't know what to make of this, but it seems that the African-American community's patience with the police have just run out. Is there a better way of putting that?
That's a good way. That's a very good way of putting it, yes.
I can agree with it.
Yeah, you know, we had a situation with Ahmaud Arbery that occurred. Georgia, where he was gunned down by two civilians, was just jogging, and it took 2 months for these murderers to be even arrested. They haven't even been convicted yet.
First of all, Leon, the video for that incident wasn't really published until maybe 6 weeks after that incident. And once the video came out, that was when the train started rolling for the two people to be arrested. And the question is, why did it take so long for that video to come out? And I think the reason why is it was the person who took it was actually a friend we got to call him the defendants right now. He was a friend of the defendants, and the guy in probably what was the worst move ever, he thought that video would exonerate them, and it did the complete opposite. So that has got to be the worst public relations move quite possibly of all time. But once that video got out, once the ball got rolling, it only took a few days for those gentlemen to be arrested. And the guy who took the video, he was arrested as well.
Yeah. Well, I believe that video was actually in circulation among certain circles on the dark web. And somehow or another, that video reached too many hands. Mm-hmm. And the gentleman, the accomplice, who put that video out figured, like, okay, this is starting to get legs. And he's all, let me hurry and put this video out. So therefore, I am not implicated. And when the McMichaels were apprehended, I'm pretty sure when they got into that interrogation room, they started talking.
Yes.
And it came out that it was actually the guy who put the video out idea to go off and kill that man. But the fact, and if you, and the shoe had been on the other foot, say that would have been a white male or a white woman in her mid-20s jogging down the street, and she was ran down by two or three black males, and she was murdered, or he was murdered. Mm-hmm. It would have took no 2 months for an arrest to be issued. You know, it wouldn't happen like that. And then the Kentucky situation where the Louisville Police Department burst into an EMT worker's, Anna Taylor's home, mm-hmm. and murders her in her sleep. And then her boyfriend, Kenny Walker, who returns fire. And it turns out that these guys did not even, they didn't announce themselves. It was a no-knock warrant. And it was allegedly the wrong house. And the person house whom they planned on raiding was actually already in custody.
Right. Leon, I'm sorry. I want to get, first of all, I want to get Todd's opinion on this. He is our guest right now from Atlanta Primetime Sports. And graciously giving some of his time for us this morning. I know, Todd, we're getting a little far afield, but I think it's very important to discuss these types of issues right now. And I just want to get your opinions on this before we go any further.
Well, this obviously is a gigantic problem in our country. We're such a nation that is so divided right now, and we've got to all come together. There has to be some type of compromise. I feel so bad for Mr. George Floyd and his family.
Right.
Because, you know, my son wants to be a police officer. He'll be 17 years old next month. And, you know, he's out of town. So we've been talking on the phone. And this is just not right, what's going on. This has got to stop. There's no question about it. I do believe that over 95% of the police officers are good people, mm-hmm. but you have a small percentage of the police officers becoming an eyesore for all of them. So you've got a few bad apples in a bag, and the rest of them, unfortunately, make them all look bad. So we've got to come to some type of compromise, if I may say. And there's nothing wrong with protesting at all. I mean, the protesting is fine. Mm-hmm. It's the looter, you know, the vandalism and et cetera that is going on, ruining people's businesses and the community. That's got to stop.
Right, right. Daniel, do you have anything to add?
I agree with everything Todd has said. He's absolutely right. This has been a rough 2020.
Yes, it has.
I mean, from the celebrities and the athletes that we've lost to the coronavirus pandemic, and now this. I mean, it's just unprecedented.
And that's another thing.
And we're not doing it.
And that's another thing. Corona still hasn't gone away.
And these
protests are effectively a petri dish for this thing, because if anybody in there has got it, that thing is going to spread like wildfire if it does what it's been doing over the last 3 or 4 months.
And it's like what Todd said, man. It's okay to protest. You know, we've never said that it was never okay not to, right?
Right.
But to vandalize and to destroy communities and to destroy properties, to destroy businesses, that's not what this should be about. Okay. And I get it. Everybody is angry.
Right.
Everybody who feels for George Floyd, you know, everybody's angry. I mean, I'm angry too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm angry and I'm frustrated about the whole thing, but not enough to go and vandalize a city. You know, when I first saw this, I turned on Fox 5, and it was funny because I was actually going to watch wrestling. I was going to watch SmackDown, you know.
Yeah. Friday, that's another thing. UFC.
Still a wrestler.
Yeah, UFC had a card yesterday here.
Yeah, they had a card yesterday.
They have their own
and
facility.
So I was going to watch. Right. And I was and that Friday night, I was going to actually watch SmackDown, and I turned it on, and SmackDown wasn't even on. Yeah. They haven't even broadcasted it. They were showing what was going on downtown. And I kept flipping back and forth between that and Channel 2. And notice, and when you look up there and you see Mayor Keisha Lance Bottom, mayor of Atlanta, in her emotion.
Right.
We had never seen, I don't know if you guys have, but I've never seen Keisha Lance Bottom that emotional before.
And let's not forget Killer Mike came on right after her.
Listen, and I don't know if Leon wasn't actually in my class, but I was at Georgia State. In 2008, Killer Mike was actually in my African American Studies class. I've listened to the brother speak, and he I'm telling you, he is articulate. I've never seen him like that before. So it's just to show. Listen, it's a serious, it's a dire situation, and you know, like Todd said, my heart goes out to the family that was affected by this, especially George Floyd's family. It's just a sad situation to see this, man. It really is, especially for all of us who have sons.
Right.
You know, I have sons, right? You know, Todd, you have a son, right?
Three of them.
Wow.
Three of them. Yeah, right. And you said you had one that was that wants to be a police officer.
Yes, he'll graduate from high school. Yep.
Exactly, and I know for a fact that probably has to make him feel a little in under ease or whatnot, you know, and I don't know, man, it's just a tough situation. It's a tough situation for everybody who has a heart, you know, especially for all the four of us. I know that it's a very deep situation.
Exactly.
We gotta think about what's going to happen when, because, you know, they gave David Chauvin, that was the other cop who murdered George, well, they gave him third-degree murder, which is murder without the intent to kill.
Exactly.
And the autopsy came back, which it looked like the autopsy was patterned by the defense, by his defense. I mean, this man already got out of jail.
It was ridiculous.
He's walking around.
Yeah, that
he's walking around.
That preliminary cause of death result was absolutely ridiculous. Attributing it to like his heart issues and all that. The only way they get away with it is if they could prove that even if the knee had not been on the neck, he would have died in the next 6 minutes. And even then, that just seems like ridiculous.
They're setting the stage for David Chauvin to walk. After he murdered that man on camera, so what type of precedent is that setting for the police officer who murdered black people?
Well,
we got to be honest about that. Is that giving them a green light to murder black people?
Look, they have to. How can I word this right? They gotta.
John, can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead, Ty. Go ahead.
The reason they did the third degree, and I don't believe it. I think the prosecution needs to go for first degree murder because first degree murder is totally premeditated.
Right. Exactly.
So at first, it's going to be hard to prove that it was premeditated. But as you watch the video and he keeps saying, I can't breathe. And you've got others watching it, other officers standing around watching it. It's a gray area. Unfortunately, the way the judicial system is, it's going to be a lot easier to convict him on a third degree murder charge than it is on a first degree murder charge. This is why they're doing it. They want to make sure they don't mess it up.
You have to get now, something you can prove beyond the reasonable doubt. You can prove that.
They'll give them the max 25 years.
Yes.
The question is, first of all, you've got to prove it with a police officer. You're going to have to go through more in court than you would the ordinary person. There's no question about it. But you know, that didn't satisfy society. That's why they're still out there doing what they're doing. My thing is that, and also the other officers, they have yet to be charged. They will be. This, unfortunately, most people don't understand this process is slow.
Yes.
And it's going to take time. And the reason it's taking time is because they better get it right, because there's no room for failure.
No.
You think they're protesting and destroying property right now. If they ever get this wrong, this is nothing compared to what we're going to see.
Right.
You know, I can remember going back to the O.J. Simpson time. You know, when he was, when you saw the car chase and all that years ago, and he went through it. If it doesn't fit, you got to quit.
Right.
Johnny Cochran, you know, he did a great job to get O.J. Simpson off.
Right.
So now we're back to this. They got to make sure that this fits.
Mm-hmm.
So they do not acquit, and they put these guys where they belong, which is in jail.
Right.
Well said. Well said, Todd.
Todd, I'm going to hold you just a second because we have Sam Crenshaw trying to dial in right now. Sam, he's trying to get in on his iPad. Can you hear me, Sam?
Yeah, I got you fine. You got me okay?
Yeah, we got you fine. Can everybody hear Sam?
Yeah, I got Sam.
All right. Sam, so glad you can join us here on this Last Three Guys Do a Podcast Zoom/Facebook Live meeting. We got Todd Corder on as well. Hey, I'm trying everything I can think of right now.
That's okay. That's all right. That's all right, and man. Throw it all up on the ceiling. See
exactly,
what sticks.
Exactly. I'm in Henderson, Nevada right now with my parents' house. I was trying to get my dog to come on up, but when she sees me with the headset on, she gets scared. I don't know. I can't explain that. Sam, you had the – I don't know if you were hearing Todd talking about they got to get this right with the situation up in Minneapolis. With your show this morning on 92.9 The Game, were you talking a lot about what was going on in Metro Atlanta? And if you were, what was the consensus from your callers?
Yeah, I mean, we got a lot of people on. And matter of fact, something that some people have been alluding to, and I knew some people have been wondering why some college coaches have been kind of quiet after this happened. And Jeff Collins from Georgia Tech was one who did speak out kind of early. Also, Sean Elliott over at Georgia State. Later yesterday, you know, we heard something from Kirby Smart and then something from Brian Bohannon over Kennesaw State. So I invited Jeff Collins to come on because I know he's an Atlanta guy. And the fact that he would speak out about it because so much was happening was just a few blocks away from the Georgia Tech campus.
Right.
And he stated himself very well that he was troubled to see it happen in Atlanta. Obviously, the players are not there right now. So his thing is, you know, he's been keeping in touch with them, just like most college coaches, through Zoom, just what we're doing here. But the last couple of days, he's just been getting a lot from the players over at Georgia Tech. So it was neat getting his perspective on it with him being an Atlanta guy with his 404 hats and everything he does and Waffle House food trucks after practice and all that carrying on. It was great. But, you know, it was somebody who has some passion for the city and was really troubled to see what happened the way it happened here. I understand what's happening in Minneapolis, and I understand what happens in other parts of the country, but people have to remember that's not the way we got what we got in this town.
Right.
No, we didn't get what we have in this town that way. And I know a lot of people who come in, people said a lot of the people who were doing the stuff and doing a lot of the violent stuff, a lot of the damaging and vandalizing of people who are not from here, and I believe that. I mean, they live here, but they weren't raised here. And so they don't have an appreciation for what we have in this town. You know, maybe they came from Philly. Maybe they come from Detroit. Maybe they come from Chicago. Well, that's what they did in those cities back in the 60s. They burned their cities up. That didn't happen in this town. We don't do that here. You know, things have gone a different way. We've achieved things, and really with the black community, you know, it's because of three B's. You know, the book, the bank, and the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Black colleges, absolutely. Black businesses, and churches. And that's what's made the difference in Atlanta and why we haven't done the stuff that they did in L.A. or they haven't done the stuff they did in New York, or the stuff they did in, you know, we didn't do that here, yet we have the city that people from all those cities want to come to. They all want to come here. We can't add lanes to the freeway fast enough. You know what I mean? And to me, that's kind of what we saw acted out. You know, and a thing you hate is for, once again, you know, the real message and the real meaning be lost in translation. because of what people see, what people really remember. And that's what you don't want in this, you know, it's just people, you know, activism and knowing how to go about activism. Yeah, we got a voice. Yeah, everybody got a voice, you know, right. You do. You got a right to speak. You got a right to protest. Absolutely. I was watching one. They were having an Augusta today. I said, what are they protesting in Augusta? But it was beautiful. It was, you know, nobody was peaceful. Everybody was orderly, very diverse crowd. They marched right past, and they marched right past the front gate of the Augusta National Golf Club.
Oh boy.
Well, I lived and worked in Augusta for 5 years, so it meant a lot to me to see them do that, and to see them, and ironically, their path went right past the front gate to the golf club. But that's fine. That's because they weren't doing anything out of kilter. They weren't doing anything to damage their home. And hopefully the people were there that were in the mix that, you know, were Augusta folks. If people came from other places, they saw how they organized it. They saw how they carried themselves, and they got in line with the rest of them. Ambassador Andrew Young said something I think that was very profound Friday night. He was being interviewed by local TV when it became apparent that we had two separate events going on Friday. There was the one peaceful group that had marched down to the state capitol and was back in Centennial Park. And then there was the group right in front of the CNN's door.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, school's out. He said, that's the one thing that concerns me. And as I thought about it and I saw what happened, you're right. Whenever there have been movements or marches or protests or demonstrations in downtown Atlanta, students have been involved. And even though it's on a semester break, you will still have enough students from Georgia State, from the Atlanta University Center and Georgia Tech still in town to be a part of that. They have ownership of that. Mm-hmm. Who runs downtown Atlanta after dark? Students.
Right.
Outside of people in the town for a convention. You know, downtown is theirs. They would not let people come in from out from somewhere else and wreck the places where they go to eat, where they go to socialize, where they go to the drugstore they go to. They wouldn't let that happen. And I really believe that, you know, it may have still had some damage, but I would like to think that it wouldn't have gone on to that degree had the students been in town like they normally would. So it's troubling to see. Kudos. There's a lot of people giving high marks to our mayor, Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms, who turned into Mama Bottoms. She has had to drop. She had to drop it in Mama mode, and it was understood. It was understood. She just wasn't having it, and good for her, and good for the city. So you know, I just think it's not a representation of what we do in our town, but it is a troubling time. And we had some other guests on the show. Greg Street, who's on B103, very popular for his hip hop show, and you know, it's been a mainstay in the Staples Market. He came on and he went downhill on it. I mean, Greg just really went in, and he's got his voice to the people. He he's finding out all kind of stuff. All kind of people are getting in touch with him and let him know stuff that's happening. He's got that kind of rapport with the community, and he was just very real about it. And in between the two, I think was Chris Draft. Former Atlanta Falcon linebacker who lives right above the Children's Museum, who we woke up this morning and that one had been trashed. Why would you wreck the Children's Museum?
I know.
You know, but he lives right there in Centennial Olympic Park, so he had a bird's eye view of everything that happened. Yesterday morning, he got up and helped them clean up the College Football Hall of Fame. This morning, he went down and helped them clean up the Children's Museum, and that's the other part about it. The way things are being cleaned up and being, you know, recovered downtown. That's kind of what we do too. But I think it'd be the overall that I've heard from people and people who called in, who basically are obviously, you know, suffering the same hurt and pain and frustration. It's a systemic thing as far as our country goes. And, you know, as you said, Todd, you got to get it right this time. The people of Minnesota got to get it right. And not just one, but all four. And I think that's, you know, people are waiting to see if it's going to be fair. This could be a landmark watershed event for the country. And boy, it comes at a time when so many other things, we got something going on that's killing us, and we can't see it, we can't touch it. You know, it just comes on at a heck of a time to add this on. But when you consider the plight, you know, of the people, you know, in the Black community who are suffering disproportionately with this virus, You know, unemployment is sky high with a lot of people across the board, but obviously even more so in that community. And now you're going to throw something else to see somebody see their life snuffed out in front of you in camera with a law enforcement officer who's looking at himself being recorded, right, and has witnesses telling him to stop, and he does not. That tips things over the top. You know, that everyone and anyone has a breaking point. And I think this makes it happen. And guess what? We ain't even going to throw in the NFL in the Rooney Rule. That's a whole nother show. That's a whole nother episode. That's a whole nother episode of Oprah. You know what I mean? We ain't touching that today.
I tell you what, though, if you want to see actually the best protest that I've actually seen, if you go to my Twitter account at Quarter Todd, Cordr Todd, I posted it today. I'm from Flint, Michigan. I've been in Atlanta for 30 years. There's a police officer in Flint, Michigan that walked the street with the protesters. He came out and he said, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, I'm sorry. He said, what would you like me to do? And they said, we would like you to march with us and stand with us. And he said, you know what? No problem. He did it. It's the best protesting story we've had by far. And I'm from an area that was economically destroyed when General Motors left. I mean, it was a town that was 200,000 people at its peak and had over 120,000 GM workers alone. Now there's about 80-90 left, and there's about 5,000 to 7,000 GM workers. So, you know, when I went to school, when I went to middle school on up, half our school was African-American. I went to high school, it was 40%. I had 35 guys on our track high school team, 28 were African-American. So, you know, people have got to learn to get along, to go along. And, you know, to go along, you got to get along, and you got to do the right thing. It's all common sense. And Mayor Bottoms, what she said, I was impressed. She came out and she said, stop, go home. You're destroying our city. There was a story on Fox News about, African-American man who's a firefighter. Right, a firefighter in Minneapolis, and he owns a bar. He was cleaning it up, and these people came in, and they were African American, and they just looted the place and took whatever they wanted and left. And I'm going, this is not a protest. This is not what you should be doing.
No business.
Communication is so bad from our political leaders down to the average individual that needs to be improved more than anything else. And then maybe somewhere as a society we can get back. And now, like Sam, you mentioned we have the virus. Are you kidding me? Let's pray. Let's just pray the heat and humidity sucks this thing away, right, and we don't have a spike in 2 weeks.
That's the one thing I think a lot of people are concerned about. I know I'm concerned about that, especially with many people that are massing together right now. There's that thing with the Lake of the Ozarks. Over Memorial Day weekend, and people are like, well, why are you doing this in these types of situations? Correct. And, well, I have to come back to Atlanta. I'm coming back tomorrow. My work is I have to take a COVID test on Tuesday, get the results from that before I can report to my place of business. So, you know, Monday night, I am studying really hard. I'm cramming. And then Tuesday, I'm going to pass that test so Friday I can go to work. So
I have to take a COVID test next Thursday myself because I have to have surgery a week from Tuesday. So you have to pass the test.
Exactly.
As a society, what do we do, you know, the way things bubbled up? I mean, when we see in Minneapolis, not just that bar that we were discussing that got burned down and looted. What do we do the next time the police want to take upon themselves to murder another African American and he gets off?
Well, that's just it. We hope that this time is the time that this starts to change for that, because we've seen it happen before. We've seen people get beaten. We've seen people, you know, get mistreated and abused. But to see this happen with witnesses and recorded, this is the thing I think that tips things over. If it's handled correctly and follow up. You know, something has to get to a point where you break it. Something has to get to the point where you stop it. You hate it, you know, obviously for the family members, you know, and the people in Minnesota who've had to deal with this, his friends and family members who you know, have lost a loved one. But, you know, maybe this is the one. I think this could be the one with all that is going on that sets the thing in a different location. Now, you got different people who do policing different ways. And right now, police are being painted in a broad brush stroke as being bad. And I felt bad for APD Friday night, having to stand there and watch their cars get burned. Because we don't have that problem in Atlanta. You know why we don't have that problem in the city of Atlanta? Because we've had 50 years of black mayors in this city. When you have 50 years of black mayors, you root that stuff out of your police department.
Right.
You know, you root those guys out. You know, not all cities do that, but they've done that. Started with Maynard Jackson. And that was the year my family moved from Birmingham to Atlanta. It was the year that Maynard Jackson became the mayor in this town. He rooted the police chief out, and those guys left Atlanta and started the Fulton County Police Department. They started a whole nother police department. They left Atlanta. So Atlanta police don't have those issues, you know, and that's what made it feel bad for that.
Yeah, because what happened to Minneapolis is a very peaceful moment, because when we seen, all right, we seen three police precincts get burned to the ground.
Right.
And the police didn't do shit. It's like, they couldn't do anything about it. Amongst race relations in this country, see, when police shoot white people ambush police. As you know, like 9 out of 10 times when white people are shot and killed by police officers, the white people don't waste any time with ambushing. White people are known for going to police officers' houses. There was an incident in Idaho where there was a Caucasian woman who she violated the stay at home order, and she took her children to the park. I guess she violated the COVID-19, and she was subsequently arrested on camera. And the citizens of her community went to that officer's house. They went to that man's house and was like, "Yo, that's not what you do around here." Like, you know, like they were protesting at the officer's house. And you know, when you hear about police officers being shot and killed, 9 out of 10 times is like white citizens doing it. But at the same time, and as you know, they don't try. Like, it's not too many times we see an innocent white person shot by police officers because they believe that white people will retaliate. Now, when they shoot African Americans, which has been gone, which you've been seeing no less than unadulterated terrorism being administered by police officers on the African American community for the better part of 10 years now. Ever since Obama's administration went,
10 years.
More than 10 years. Yeah, I'm just saying.
Okay.
We go back further than that.
Yeah, we can.
Let's go back further.
You know,
so we're talking about unadulterated terrorism on our community. And with no charges, these police officers have most times waited charged. So they're like giving the green light. So therefore, as African American community, we got to look to ourselves like, damn, we don't want to be terrorized. Like, I don't want to be next. You don't want to be next. Daniel doesn't want to be next. Nobody wants to be next. So it's like, and it seems to me that when black people peacefully protested, i.e. Colin Kaepernick, you know, he did a whole knee, he dropped down one knee. That man lost his job behind that. Donald Trump said that those SOBs don't want, you know, like Donald Trump went on record saying some very racist stuff. Jerry Jones goes out and says that you get the SOBs out there and play and things of that nature. So the peaceful thing was ignored. And it was mocked. Am I correct?
Well, it was the narration was stolen. And just like this could be stolen.
Corrupted.
Because you got people who come in and that's the thing. If you allow it to be stolen, but that's advocacy, and that's not being schooled in being an advocate and what it takes. They've had a symposium, I won't say a symposium, but a workshop here at Morehouse for the past two springs, where they brought NFL players and professional athletes to basically lecture them and learn about advocacy. Yeah, you got a right, but there's a way to do it, and don't get diverted from your purpose. The purpose was to make awareness of African-American men being unfairly treated by law enforcement. That was the purpose. But then it changed into something else. Oh, you're not going to give Kaepernick a job. Oh, we're going to, oh, you call us an SOB. All that stuff was stuff to get you to the side. They tried that back in the 60s. Dr. Martin Luther King, he's a communist. No, we want our rights. We want to vote. We want a good job. We want to go to school. You got to stay focused on what it is, the bottom line you want to achieve. The NFL players allowed that narrative to be stolen from them, and we can't let the narrative be stolen this time. We got to be focused.
It's starting,
you know, and you got to maintain it.
It's starting to happen a little bit. You can see with some where President Trump wants to label Antifa a domestic terrorist organization. It's not an organization. There's not a centralized authority, and that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to paint this as a domestic terrorism organization. That's part of what you're talking about. Steal the narrative. Frame it in a way that your cause looks bad. And that's what, as you said, Sam, they cannot allow that to happen. But in the absence of a framework, of a centralized organization, it's going to be very tough for them to keep that cohesion in the face of what's going to be coming at them.
It's true. It's very true. And that's the thing that troubles you about the last couple of nights. And we'll see what happens tonight as other cities put a curfew. The curfew in Atlanta here stays in effect for another night. That's the thing you don't want, to get to the point and then have some lives be lost that way. You know, now you got a whole different, thing now, because now it becomes, they're a bunch of hooligans, they're a bunch of thugs, they're out there rooting and stealing and killing, you know, and that's the part that you can ill afford. Yes, some of that comes out of frustration. I understand it, you know, and some people are even saying, okay, well, at least they're getting away from doing their own neighborhood. They went to Buckhead. Out in L.A., they went to Rodeo Drive. Mm-hmm. You know, and okay.
They tore Melrose up. In my city, they tore up the same, like, they tore up Fashion Valley, La Mesa. Like, all the major points of commerce got pretty much obliterated.
Yeah. But, I mean, okay, that's been done. You know, from this point, you got to find a way to reel it back in and get on the same page and get back to the center thing that you want to achieve. You want this man's death that people witness to be the thing that tips things over there and swings things back the way that things should be, for the equality and justice, something that, you know, really, you know, I won't say it's never been, but it's always been the ideal. But for whatever reason, you know, the African-American community, well, we know for whatever reason, some people say you keep moving the goalposts, that, you know, when you get to a certain place, the goalpost moves another 10 yards, right. Moves another 15 yards. And that's what it's been really in this country since its inception. And that's what people don't want to deal with, don't want to have a conversation about. And, you know, you just hope this is the thing that forces that conversation and forces some results and forces some people to elect some people to get into office who would do things differently. And most people know with the reason a lot of officers have gotten away with this, police officers, they do it in a certain district. And the district attorney, those people are all their friends. They all go to lunch together. They all go play golf together. Well, he ain't going to send him to jail. It's not going to happen. You got to get some folk in those type of positions who are going to be fair-minded and do the right thing. And know, you know, badge or not, you out of line, and we're not having that conduct in this town for people. In other words, you got to hold them to a high standard. If you're going to do that, it can't be just nepotism. In a lot of major cities, you know, law enforcement is something. You got second, third, and fourth members of families. You know, a young guy comes in. Well, he sat around the table at Thanksgiving. He's heard his daddy talk about how he went down the neighborhood, not folks in the head with the nightstick. He heard granddaddy talk about how he used to do it, so he can't wait for his turn. You know, you got to root that stuff out. You know, you got to have people in place that we're going to do the right thing when those people are brought into a courtroom and do the right thing and get them out. You know,
well, so speaking of that, I mean, it all comes down to, Sam, you made a great point about district attorneys. But anything we do in society is politics, whether it's from the left, from the right, or wherever it is, whatever their view is, and whatever their slant is, even as a district attorney, that slant comes out. There's got to be a way the judicial system has to come together, meet in the middle, and do the right thing and get it over with. Stop covering for your buddy. Stop. No. Go by the law. And unfortunately, we don't do that anymore. You know, the left tries to do this. The right tries to do that. Nobody comes to try to come together anymore. And this is what we've gotten. and this is where we are today. And it's still going on today. There's still the protests are still going on. That part's okay, but the damage, like you said, they're doing to the police cars and people's businesses. The economy, you already mentioned it. It's already crushed. We got 40 million people filing for unemployment. These businesses may never be able to open up and back again, especially in Atlanta. And a lot of them are owned by African Americans. People are destroying their own property, their own way of life. Think about this. Every day this goes on, we are closer here in the United States of becoming a third world country. Don't think it's possible, because it is. Because of our political divide.
Yep. It has
and
to be
racial
a red
divide.
Well, it has to become a red, white, and blue issue, not just a red or blue issue. And that's the thing, is that this country, so everything almost has to be red and blue. I mean, I got friends of mine, people I went to school with, I got on Facebook, and I see them write stuff, and I just avoid it. You know, I said, you know, because I know everything. They want to see what you're going to write to say, okay, it's this or that. And I'm like, but this issue that we're dealing with, and we got to maintain this is a red, white, and blue issue. It's not a red issue or a blue issue. It can't be that. It's more important than that. It means more than that. And you can't make it trivial and be something that people can pull to one side or the other. This country is so right now, things that have a galvanizing effect on us. We know 9/11 had a galvanizing effect on this country.
Yeah.
It didn't matter. It didn't matter that we had a Republican president or a Democratic president. We all got together on it.
Right.
We're flunking that test badly with this pandemic. And now with this, you wonder if we can even withstand this along with the virus, because we just haven't handled that very well. Everybody wants to point a finger. Everybody wants to put a blame. Everybody wants to paint it. If you do one thing, you're this. If you don't do that, you're the other. Instead of saying, you know what, just do what's right.
Sam, I noticed the college coaches and the professional coaches that came out. I saw what Tony Dungy said. I saw what Tom Izzo said. That was really powerful. I saw what the Lincoln Riley said at Oklahoma. This stuff is what we need, a powerful message from someone who has a powerful platform to use it in a positive way. People want to get involved. Get involved in your community. Go behind the scenes and do the work.
Exactly. And want to point out that here in Las Vegas, you think it's bad in Atlanta, Las Vegas has the highest unemployment rate in the nation, 33% unemployment here in Las Vegas. Now, they're going to start opening up the casinos, I believe, Wednesday. They're going to stagger them out. The Bellagio, New York, they're the first ones to go. They'll be opening up, as I mentioned, June 4th. They're going to see how that goes and very gradually start moving outward. And we also got a statement. You're talking about Lincoln Riley and the coaches. Michael Jordan just put out a statement on his Twitter, and I'm going to quote it for you. I stand with those who are calling out the ingrained racism and violence toward people of color in our country. We have had enough, unquote. That is Michael Jordan. He put out that statement on his Twitter feed. We are the last three guys to do a podcast, joined by Sam Crenshaw and Todd Corder, talking about the events in this country, specifically the riots that were held over Friday night. Things are simmering down a little bit. Mentioned, I believe, Sam, you mentioned, and Leon mentioned, there was a peaceful demonstration in Augusta. There was also one covered by our friend Frank Silkowski from WJCL of Savannah, and that also appeared to be very peaceful as well. We want to see a lot of that. But getting back to your other two points, a lot of the things in the country is based on this statement, where what I believe is more important than what I know. And I think that is trying to put in a doctrine that is rigid, that doesn't change, that doesn't address people's concerns, that we believe what we want to believe, and rather than face things that might challenge those preconceived notions, we either ignore them or we vilify them. And I think that is what we're seeing right now. Preconceived notions are being challenged, especially with Colin Kaepernick, which again did start this kind of whole thing. And rather than acknowledge them and say, okay, maybe we have been doing something wrong, the much easier, the much psychologically beneficial way to go, the way that doesn't challenge your beliefs, is to vilify what's coming at you. And that's what we're seeing right now.
Well, you know, Denzel Washington from the movie Remember the Titans?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Remember when he had out there, remember his speech when he told the team right in front of that graveyard when they went for that long run in the middle of the night, the players couldn't figure out what the hell he was doing. And then he got him and he said, hey, if we don't come together right now, we too will be destroyed. Right. And you know what? That is what's going on in this country. If we don't come together, we will be destroyed.
Right.
That's correct.
The judicial system needs to make a conscious effort to start convicting police officers. Whenever they get out of line, they want to rush in people's houses. Because, you know, those police officers in Kentucky are going to be charged. The ones who broke into Breonna Taylor's home and murdered her.
As
a matter of fact, they tried to charge the boyfriend for shooting one of them who broke in her house. And there's evidence that they visited the crime scene and they shown there were shots that are being fired from outside the home. So it was like, it looked almost like it. On an EMT worker.
Yes.
Wow.
That's crazy. And you know, Kentucky turned up behind that. But that's nothing short of judicial barbarism at this point. You know, we can't, if this country wishes to survive, they're going to have to start convicting. Like, those police officers, all of them should be brought on charge. There's no excuse for that. And it was like, I believe it was like eight of them on a no-knock warrant. And then it seemed to me that they started lying when they said that we had the wrong house. No, the guy whose house you guys wanted to bust into was actually already in custody. So, like, what are you guys doing at this point? Are you guys picking African Americans out of some type of weird lottery? Or the Atlanta, or what is the young lady in Dallas, Texas? I mean, it's a shame that it's so many names.
Yes, she went to the wrong room and went to the wrong apartment and killed the person who was already there because she thought it was her place.
I mean, that was Amber Geiger. She got 10 years and she should have got 25. That was Amber Geiger. You see how many, it's so many cases of this occurring. I don't believe it's by accident. To be honest with you, it's to the point. Now, one time, okay. But now there's countless amounts of time.
Too many times that it's happening.
And not only that, we've had at least three instances of reporters covering this being targeted, either by police. We've had two videographers whose eyes basically lost eyes because they got shot with either a rubber bullet, pepper spray, that thing. There was the CNN crew in Minneapolis who was arrested for covering it. The person, the reporter, was African-American. We had a white reporter maybe in the near vicinity. He wasn't bothered. And with the whole thing at CNN, I think CNN just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time because there's that Atlanta precinct that's right in CNN Center. And I think that was the target of that whole protest. CNN just happened to be in the wrong area.
And I just think that's what made it all the worse. If we're going to do something like that, get another part of town. But we're going to do it right outside the door of the folks that can broadcast it to the whole world.
Yep.
Nice. You know, you ought to miss it when it's right outside your door. But I'm right. Well, agreeing with you, John. I wondered when I saw that, do people realize that's a police precinct?
Yeah.
That's a police precinct right there. If you ride by there anytime, any day, you see a row of police cruisers right there in front of a State Farm Arena.
Mm-hmm.
And to do it there, of all places, like I said, it showed the restraint of APD to stand there. And all the police departments all over the country, because the minute they go in and do anything, you know, they know that people are on high alert to see what they're going to do. So for the most part, a lot of them are standing back and not doing things. I guess, that they would normally do in that situation. That they realize that it's to the point, people are frustrated, they got to vent, but as long as they're doing it peacefully. Now, some of the places, some of these things have been popping up, because yesterday folks showed up here in Gwinnett County, man, at Sugarloaf Mills. I'm like, what in the ham sandwich? I said, what in the ham sandwich they doing up here? And late last night, they're in Gainesville up in Hall County. I'm like, Hall, really?
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 Yeah. They were protesting in my hometown, Woodstock, last night, but it was
Woodstock?
What are you kidding Woodstock?
Me? Protesting what?
They're going from Woodstock to Savannah, all of Georgia.
What are they retracing correct. Sherman's route? Is that what they're doing? I mean, are they going to stop
I thought about that. I thought about that. I did. I thought about that. I'm like, wow, we're going back to Sherman here. This is crazy. You know, it just like the Minneapolis Police Department, that area, they burned down a police station.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, whoever thought that would ever happen in the United States of America? I just can't believe it. Three of them. I know. Three of them. That's correct.
Three of them.
You know, could you imagine? Well, this I watch live PD quite a bit, especially now that there's
nothing else.
No sports on TV. That's kind of been my go-to. You know what? Live PD is on every week. They've made the adjustments. This was the week they took off, and I'm thinking, thank goodness they did. It wouldn't matter where they reported from. They'll be back on live PD next week, and I'm praying by next week that this is all over with and that all these police officers, even the ones that were standing there, are all charged with a truckload, as much as they can charge them, because once I said earlier, they must get it right. And Johnny Cochran, he did with OJ.
Yep.
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit. Well, here it fits, and you must convict. So they better get it right.
Yep, and that's what we were kind of saying last week in regards to the COVID-19 response and the COVID-19 as we're coming back from it, as we're reopening. We're only going to get one shot at this. So you got to get it right. And guys, let me ask you
if
this:
if we don't get it right, it could be 10 times worse.
Exactly,
it could be 10 times worse. What we're seeing now and what we've seen before, it could get maybe 100 times worse.
And guys, let me ask you this: this may sound like I'm making light of the situation. Is it true that there were no Waffle Houses that were ransacked? Oh, they kept clear of the Waffle House.
Oh no, no, that's a Waffle House. Oh, yeah, very much. Right there on Marietta Street. The one going right now past Stats.
Okay.
Past Stats. I mean, everything on Marietta Street got going, starting at McCormick & Schmick's, Omni Hotel, Hall of Fame, Starbucks. McCormick & Schmick's, they went in. Mayor Keisha mentioned they came in and they hit the bar, ran out with all the brown liquor. Mayor Keisha mentioned that.
Right, I mean, she did.
They went right down the block, a Ruth Chris Steakhouse. They got all the look out of that bar. They went down by Stats. There's a barbecue place down there. I forget. There's Twin Smokes or whatever. The Waffle House is right there.
Okay.
There was also the other one, another Waffle House. Because I mean, Waffle House, you got about 6 of them downtown.
Yeah.
There was one over near Georgia State, over on one is right there. What's that? Cortland. Cortland.
The one across from the sports arena.
Not that one. Yeah, you're going up Piedmont. Piedmont, as you cross Auburn Avenue, Piedmont right there. Is the one right there? Is a block over from Cortland. Yes, up there. You know, they arrested a bunch of people in front of that one last night. I saw a helicopter view, and they had a bunch of people down there. Police were making a lot of arrests. But the one I knew that got the damage is the one down on Marietta Street.
I'm surprised.
Hey, Sam, can I ask all you guys a question real quick, if I may, please?
Sure.
You know what? Yesterday they went in front of the governor's mansion, and they had – it would have been really good, in my opinion. I don't know what you guys are thinking. If the governor would have came out and addressed the people and said, we're sorry. Is there anything we can do for you? If he would have just came out and made a speech like Keisha did, and just and did that, I think that would have went a long way in towards trying to mending the fence. But then again, maybe not.
I don't know. I don't know what they would have done. The crowd. I know they brought in some National Guard and
right. I saw that.
That crew disappeared. That whole crew disappeared up there pretty quickly once they all showed up. So I don't know if they go back up in that part of town again tonight. I'm not sure. I saw they had a protest earlier today. They were back down around Centennial Park, and that one looked to be pretty peaceful. But we'll see. Strange things have happened when the sun go down the last couple of nights. I think that's what we're waiting to see. But the curfew is still in effect.
I was waiting.
Sam, what do you guys think, though? Do you think the governor should have came out? Do you think it would have helped had he said the right thing?
I think he should have made some sort of statement.
Yeah, he could have made some type of statement. It would have been nice for him to say that. Or even if he's at the headquarters or whatever, say something that's a direct appeal to them. To me, he didn't really say anything that directly appealed to the people who are outside the governor's mansion. The fact that they would come there and be right outside, to me, earned some type of acknowledgement.
Okay. I'm sorry, Sam. I gotta interject here. We got some breaking news. Two Atlanta officers were fired for excessive force. They slashed tires. It was the one where they tased both passengers and arrested both passengers in a car for really doing nothing.
Last night.
That was captured on TV last night. I saw that last night. Oh, yeah. That was on Channel 46.
They were fired.
Sam, that's what I'm talking about. They got to stop that.
Well, they were fired.
If you keep on doing that, they got to stop that.
Yeah.
He wasn't resisting. They got him and his girlfriend. I got to deal with that last night. That's disgusting.
Yep.
And I said, if the PD, if they start acting civilized, then you won't have a problem. I mean, it's simple cause and effect. If you treat people with respect, I tell like people, we don't have this problem.
Yeah.
Society goes on as normal. You know?
I'm surprised. Yeah. Another one of my efforts at lame humor. So I'm surprised that with the College Football Hall of Fame, we haven't seen too many memes of people saying, like a Georgia fan putting out, they looted the College Football Hall of Fame, Georgia Tech memorabilia was not touched. You know, I'm surprised we haven't seen more of that.
Maybe once people realize that, you know, it was the gift shop and none of the artifacts were impacted at all. None of the artifacts were touched and damaged. It was the gift shop out front.
Yeah. This has been a great conversation, but I want to switch gears just one second. And I want to ask the panel, everyone here, Sam, Todd, Daniel, Leon, what are the odds that we're going to have Major League Baseball this season? I think it's 25% and dwindling rapidly.
I think they're going to get together. I think we got about a 90% chance. Call me crazy, but I think the billionaires and the millionaires are going to come to a compromise, and here's where the compromise is. It's called deferred money.
Yeah.
The conflict is between, really, the superstars and the owners.
Yes.
The people that are making the league minimum, they're fine. They're ready to go, but they have to back their union. So if you can tell the superstars that, hey, you're not going to get all of it, but we can, you know, defer a portion to you down the line when things get better, I think there's where you're compromised, and I think that's where you'll get the players to come back. There's just too much money to be left on the table. There's too much at stake. If baseball doesn't come back this year, it's going to be hurting for years to come. There's too much on the table. It's got to happen. That's why I think everybody will come to their senses and make it happen.
I think Scott Boras needs to just put a lid on it. He is not helping.
I agree 100%. That's what it's going to come down to. Too much revenue that has stake to just leave it on the table. You know,
you guys want to go see a Twitter feed? Go check out Trevor Bauer's Twitter feed. He basically, goodness, that's entertainment right there.
I agree that they do need to play. I think they will get to play, and if they do those deferred payments, to me, that's the best course they can take right now. Just to get on the field and get some. To me, they can't afford if none of the other major league sports played okay, but if these other major league sports come back and they don't, my goodness, you know, what would they have to do really to ingratiate themselves back to the fans, really, to get them to come out and support them when all the other sports found a way to come back? Well, baseball finds a way to get back out on the field, too.
Yeah.
Here's my thing about it. I agree with what Todd was saying, but on a landscape, on a whole scope, I think the chances would be maybe 10%. And here's why. We're talking about millionaires and billionaires. The one thing that everybody has to put to the side is ego. If they can put the egos to the side, then we will have a season. And they understand what the situation comes about, then we can have a season. Otherwise, I don't think so. But egos have to be, that's what we talk about here when we talk about millionaires and billionaires. Simple as that.
Yep.
Everybody has to put their damn egos to the side and say, hey, let's do this. Let's play. Now, they're probably not going to play with fans. We're not going to have fans in the stands. You have to understand that. And I like the whole thing where we probably get started in maybe July or so. That's fine. I like that. I like that plan. But it's like you said, Ty, the owners and the superstars, the big money makers can just sit down and get them in the court, then I think we'll have a season.
I think we'll even have it with fans in the stands slowly as we go along in August. Yeah. I think you will see fans in the stands. It won't be 100% capacity.
Right.
I mean, look, you saw everybody. I'll tell you what, this will be the ultimate test for me for fans in the stands. When we've seen all these protests and everything else is going on, if in 2 weeks we don't have a spike, all the MLB, the NHL, the NBA, college football, the NFL are going to go, all right, it's time, let's go. We can start putting fans in the stands. If we don't get a spike in 2 weeks, they'll start it off at a small percentage and they'll ramp it. I know one thing, the SEC, they're going to play.
Oh, yeah, there's no question of that.
I mean,
they're going to play. They're going
to
play. Doubt,
and I think they'll have fans in the stands to start the season.
I think they will, too. I think they'll – how many? That's going to be a question.
That's the question.
Ohio State was. It had about 25,000 was going to be their ceiling. But you're talking about, Todd, you're talking about the spike, as it were. It all depends on how you're going to count it. Florida has said, oh, we don't have a spike, but – we do have this bunch of people who died from ammonia. You know, that can't have anything to do with it. It's just a matter, you know, they're playing game. Florida, if that's true, Florida's playing games with numbers. If that's true, and like I said, they're saying that, yeah, we don't have a spike, but boy, these pneumonia cases are going through the roof. I don't understand it. That's if that's true, and I think we have to rely on numbers because. I mean, everyone wants us to get better, but I just think you can't trust the politicians with the numbers. If we can get honest feedback from the medical professionals, those are the numbers you got to trust.
Yeah, John, I have a chance.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sam. Go ahead.
Chance to talk with Dr. Brian Hainline. I had a chance to interview him for the podcast that I've started to do the last couple of weeks, the Talking Tennis Southern Style podcast. And he's the vice president of the USTA, but he's also the CMO of the NCAA. And he's one of the people whose findings, data is going to be factored into if and when college sports returns. And it was an interesting conversation. He talks about the inner bubble. And the inner bubble are the people, the necessary people, the essential people, the people who have to be there. The testing. When do you test? How often do you test? And if you test and you get positives, how many positives can you get and still play a game? If you get 2 positives during the course of the week, but if you have 5 positives on Friday or Saturday, what do you do then? So that's the thing that he's dealing with. And then the way he sums it up, the inner bubble, the people who have to be the essential people on the field, how do you take care of those people, the coaching staff? Remember on coaching staffs, we have some people who fall into that risky category for this virus. Mm-hmm. Some who are over 65, some that got health issues, so you got to remember those people as well. And then the outer bubble you worry about, the people of whatever, if you're going to try to still have network broadcasts, if you got people to man the cameras and that type thing, and then slowly people in the stands. So that's the way he sums it out. And the way he rolls it out, he's pretty optimistic. He's pretty upbeat. he's not a lot of gloom and doom. And when I talked to him, that's refreshing. What I expected to get. He wasn't a lot of gloom and doom. He could see it possibly happening. I'm also watching for tennis. The U.S. Open is trying to hold out. New York is back open. New York is reopening, and they're holding on to try to have that tennis event. Now, he said the only caution about that is tennis is an international sport. A lot of the European players may not come because, remember, the French Open has been pushed to after the U.S. Open. They did not cancel the French Open. It is going on. So they will probably, a lot of the European players will probably stay. I mean, Djokovic is already talking about he ain't crazy about taking a vaccine or anything, but he want to come to New York and get that check. I know that's what he wants to get. You know, so he'll show up. But, you know, you watch and see what happens with that sport, because that's right along the same time as football season will be getting ready to get started. You know, so that's that we watch for those two things. But it was interesting conversation with him.
Hey, Sam, you know what? Everybody, we haven't mentioned about the parents yet, guys. All of us. What are the parents of these kids going to do? I mean, think about this. You get deep into the season and all of a sudden you've got a situation where, you know, you've got a really good player, but, you know, does the coach, if there's a problem with that player, does the coach do what's best for the kid, or does he try to go all out and win that game?
What kind of problem?
Say the kid has a health problem, maybe in the family, and the kid is saying, well, I don't know, you know, I don't know if I can play this week. I may be vulnerable because I was hanging around so-and-so. I had to go home and I saw a family and somebody contacted the family and I came back. There are many situations, though, where are the coaches going to do what's best for that kid over winning a game? That was brought up on national TV last week.
Well, you brought up parents because everybody talks about conference commissioners. Everybody talks about school presidents. Everybody talks about athletic directors and coaches. But you're right, Todd. They don't talk about parents. What if a parent said, you know, before the season starts, you know what? Not comfortable with our kid coming here. We think he has a future beyond playing college football, and we got 3 years to play. We're going to redshirt this year. We'll see you in the spring for spring ball. What you going to do?
It's all about risk assessment.
You going to pull a scholarship?
No.
What are you going to do? Because you can't pull that kid's scholarship and go sit in another parent's home next year recruiting if you do that. So I think, like you mentioned, the parents are the people that nobody's really talking about here. But they could have a big say in who plays when college football starts. Now, the NFL is a whole different thing. Them dudes are going to play. And if nothing else, the people in the suites are going to be there for sure.
Right.
You know, I know the people in the suites will be there because you bring them in, you check their forehead for the temperature. Once you get them in the suite, they don't come out. They're not at concession stands. They got all the food and everything they want. Those folks are going to be easy to maintain. They will be at the games regardless.
Major League Baseball will open up them suites. That's why the owners wanted the games in their home stadium, A, for the suites, and B, Joe's Tire Barn behind home plate advertising or whatever it is. Out in the outfield. That's why the owners didn't want it at spring training sites. They want any kind of gate they can get.
Yep. And, you know, I was talking with somebody. Watch for this. I was talking with David Rumsey from the Sports Business Chronicle. Watch for how we use different places on the field and on the stadium to post advertising.
Yes.
Watch on the field. We'll superimpose a logo for something. Well, you know, watch it. Just watch. Yeah, just watch.
Korean,
you know,
baseball's been
Korean baseball.
They were superimposing the FedEx logo. That's always on there.
You're gonna see
GM in a tent out in left field at the Braves Stadium. Some big company's gonna have the row of seats are gonna be covered with GM or Hyundai or whatever. It's coming.
You paint those seats the Technicolor green, you can put anything you want on them. Or just lay, Technicolor greens.
You guys are laughing on left, center, right.
They just want to turn the cameras on.
Exactly.
This baseball is not about black and white. It's about green. That's it.
Absolutely.
All sports are about green.
Exactly.
It's not just baseball. Exactly. It's all sports, Todd.
Yeah. Right. That's right. Even at the high school level.
Yes.
They're going to do that too.
High school football.
Yes. Well,
they will do that. With the, they're going to be the first ones back. I mean, after in a couple of weeks, next Monday, here in Georgia, high school players can start coming back to the practice facilities at their schools. June 8th.
Do you think they'll have there. School? Do you think school will start? I mean, Cherokee start. The Cherokee County starts on August 1st. I don't know yet. It's too soon to tell, isn't it?
It's a little soon, but you already see what they're going to do. You see what they're doing with the colleges. You know, they're going to start the semester. Yeah. They're going to start everybody's semester sooner. So when you go for Thanksgiving, you're going to take your finals and go home and stay.
Yeah.
And so, which I think is smart. Instead of taking your finals, go home for a week and then come back after you've been hanging out with relatives and whatnot and bring it all back to campus, possibly, potentially. But by doing that, it also guarantees that the players are there for your fall sports.
These coaches think that they can handle these players and their own environment on their campus safer than they can if the players are at home.
Todd, I want Daniel to – Daniel's trying to jump in. Daniel?
And I'm an employee at Georgia. No problem, guys. I'm loving this conversation.
Yes.
And I'm an employee at Georgia State. So, and they're still trying to come up with a plan for August, which is our semester start. August, I believe, technically, I think it's August 24th, if I'm not mistaken. But they're trying to come up with a practice of social distancing or whatnot. Now, all classes are online for the summer semester. So there's no sense of, you know, instructors coming back. But for August, for the fall semester, they are going to practice social distancing. Maybe not having a Monday, Wednesday class. Mm-hmm. Maybe Monday you're in class, Wednesday you're on. They're trying to incorporate something like that, but we don't really know the particulars yet. And, you know, it's just one of those times that we're in now. I mean, where everybody just has to follow school. If everybody just follow what we do, then I think we'll get back to normal. But I told people.
And hopefully we'll have football as Georgia State hosts Murray State to open up the 2020 season at Georgia State Stadium, and Reinhardt will open up a week earlier down in Florida, Miami Gardens, against Florida Memorial. That will be on August 29th. Hopefully that is it. Well, guys, it's been a great conversation. I'm afraid we are going to have to leave it there. We're about for this episode. We'll hopefully get you all back here to keep talking about this. And it was just great. It's just a shame that we've run out of time here. I want to thank both my guests, Sam Crenshaw, Todd Corder, for joining us. Again, Sam on 92.9 The Game and Todd with Atlanta Prime Sports every Wednesday night. Appreciate that. And Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown, thank you guys as well for joining me here on The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast. I will be coming back to Atlanta tomorrow, and we'll have our regular show on Sunday. Next Sunday, we'll all be in the same city. Hopefully everybody can stay safe, and thanks so much for joining us here on Facebook Live. This will be rebroadcast on SoundCloud on Tuesday and also on the radio.com app. So, guys, thank you so much for spending donating a part of your time for this. We really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, John. Safe travels, man. Safe travels.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Todd. All right, that's going to do it for us. Thanks so much for joining us here on The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast.